The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org. BC has one of the highest child poverty rates in Canada, a rate that only grew higher in the 20 months since the COVID-19 pandemic began. Over 163,000 children in the province experience food insecurity. Food banks help, but many families still depend on school breakfast, lunch, and snack programs to meet their children's baseline nutritional needs. But these programs only exist during the week. Backpack Buddies is an organization that supplements school meal programs by providing food for the weekend. Founded in 2012 by Emily Ann King and her mother, Backpack Buddies provides food to children throughout the province. And I recently spoke with Emily Ann King. Hello, Emily Ann King, and welcome to Co-op Radio.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
So you work and co-founded an organization called Backpack Buddies, and tell us a little bit about that. Introduce us to the company.
Yeah. So Backpack Buddies seeks to address the often hidden and crippling crisis of childhood hunger in our province. So what we do is address the weekend hunger gap faced by students who rely on school meal programs Monday to Friday. So you often hear about kids that are, you know, really relying upon those breakfast and lunch programs that schools are offering, but don't often consider what happens to those children on Saturdays and Sundays. So that's really our mission, is to make sure children have what they need over the weekend so that they can come to school Monday morning ready to learn.
You say that hunger is really something that's hidden, or hunger for children is hidden within the province. Being a volunteer at Co-op Radio, that's something we've talked about an awful lot over the years. Maybe let our listeners know a little bit about what that crisis is like. You know, how many kids are going hungry, and start from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So research prior to the COVID-19 pandemic was indicating that there was over 160,000 children in BC living in food insecurity. So that's about one in five children. And we know firsthand that that has gotten much, much worse. You know, research from Stats Canada in conjunction with the Breakfast Club of Canada is indicating that as many as one in three children nationally are facing food insecurity. So it really is a massive, massive issue. And I think that people often perceive or assume that there are sort of pockets in our province and communities that are lower income where this issue resides, and that it's localized there. But it is not. It is in every single one of our communities across our entire province, and it might be the family next door to you, and you don't realize. So, you know, it really is, it's hidden, and part of what we're trying to do as an organization is really bring awareness to the severity of this issue, you know, the long-term effects of it on children, and then really hopefully mobilize our community to help us in the fight against it.
What would you say are some of the reasons behind this food insecurity? Is it solely a matter of just families not being able to earn enough money to pay for all the expenses required, or are there issues surrounding like food deserts or ways for people to access food not equally distributed around the province and around the city?
Well, that's exactly it. There is a lot of different reasons depending on the area, and you know, the kind of concept of food deserts. That's something as an organization we are really working on at the moment, trying to get food to really remote and isolated communities where, you know, a head of lettuce could be over $10, and you know, access to grocery stores that are well stocked is just not an option. And so there's challenges like that. And then when you move into more urban settings, it's the sheer cost of living in places like Vancouver. You know, there's so many challenges that families are facing when it comes to affordable housing, affordable food, and childcare. And so when this all adds up, it can be really devastating. And you know, what we've seen through COVID is a whole new group of newly vulnerable families that were you know, maybe never worried prior to COVID about putting food on the table for their kids, but then both parents suddenly lose work and they haven't regained full-time employment. And now they're finding themselves in a position where they're needing support from agencies like ours. And so, you know, there's a, not a one-size-fits-all kind of answer or model for this. It has a lot of different faces in a lot of different regions of our province.
I certainly would like to spend more time talking about people coping throughout the pandemic over, what are we, coming up to 20 months now, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, can you tell me a little bit about the background? How did Backpack Buddy start?
Yeah, so my mom and I co-founded the organization together in 2012 when this sort of issue of this weekend hunger gap was brought to our attention by an outreach worker at a school on the downtown east side, Grandview Elementary. So we were speaking with her actually about a different project, and we said to her, what would be one wish for your students? And her response to us was to send them home on Friday with food and to know that they'd have what they needed on the weekend. And it was sort of that proverbial light bulb moment where you think, oh, that makes total sense. And we looked around in the space and realized that there really wasn't any agencies that were really targeting this specific period of time. And for some reason, we decided we were going to be the ones to try to do something about that. So we started with 20 bags of food on a Friday afternoon to Grandview. And today we are supporting close to 4,000 children a week all across our province in you know, 36 communities and over 180 distribution sites.
And you mentioned 100, how many cities did you say in communities in BC?
36 communities.
So are you spread out throughout the entire province, or are you mostly? Yes. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. And how can you tell me a little bit about you and your mom too, about, you know, what sort of background brought you to want to come down to the downtown east side in the first place, and what motivated you to get into work such as this?
Yeah, so my mom has been in the philanthropic space and has been a fundraiser for over 30 years and has always worked on different children focused initiatives. Having four children herself, she's really all about kids. And she was my, as she likes to say, she was sort of an empty nester. My youngest brother had left home and she was looking for her next project and the next way that she could sort of help the community. And so she started making connections to some schools on the downtown east side and started having conversations with them about, you know, what their different needs are and maybe what she could do to support them. And I myself at the time was sort of newly out of university and was working at a law firm, getting ready to, you know, take the LSATs and hopefully go to law school. And she came to me with this idea and said, you know, I really think we should try to do something about this. And it really felt like a no-brainer to me. And so I left my job and we started doing this work together. And it's really, we never looked back. And I think that really as people in this world that we're here to walk each other home. We should really just be all looking out for each other. And this is our way to help and hopefully leave a positive impact in our community and in our province.
How does the program work? Can we work our way through the, you know, the day-to-day operations of how Backpack Buddies work? Like, let's start with how do you collect the food? How do you organize collecting the food?
Yeah, so we have a primary warehouse in North Vancouver that's just over 10,000 square feet, so it's quite large. And we bring in the majority of the food comes into this warehouse, and we purchase almost all of it using really strong buying power with different suppliers. And that food comes here, it's sorted, and then we have sort of an assembly line system where our volunteers help to fill the bags. And so each bag that we're delivering has 9 meals plus fresh fruit and snacks. So it's sort of everything that the child needs for the weekend plus a little bit extra. So the majority of the bags are for the Lower Mainland are fulfilled in this primary warehouse, and then they're sent out on our delivery trucks. And then there's a huge portion of the bags as well that are packed here and then are put on the back of different shipping partners' trucks and sent to different parts of the province. So we go as far north as Stewart, BC. We go into Nelson in the Kootenays and all over Vancouver Island, you know, from Victoria to Port Hardy. So And we have a few smaller satellite warehouses in other regions as well. So there is one in Victoria and one in the Tri-Cities that sort of really help us maintain the distribution flow, because it is, you know, upwards of 36,000 meals a week. So it's a lot.
That is indeed a big operation, and everything, even the meals that are distributed out, you know, as far afield as Nelson or Stewart, they're all packed down here in the Lower Mainland, mainly in the North Vancouver area. Is that right?
Yeah, so the shelf-stable items are packed here, and then the fresh items are added each week on the ground. So we usually would ship sort of a month's worth of bags to these more remote regions, and they're sent to school locations or community locations. And then there's a recipient on the end, so, you know, an outreach worker or a principal, for example, that will receive the bags, and then they're responsible each week. They commit to adding the fruit and then handing them out to the children on Friday before they go home.
And the food, you said that you purchase it. So is everything purchased, or is anything ever donated by local businesses, grocery stores, and so on?
Yeah, we do have some donations. One particular company, Free Yum, they're a local allergen-free granola bar and sort of snack company. They donate their product to us. So they donate upwards of 50,000 bars a year to the program, which is extraordinary. And then the rest of the product, almost all of it, is purchased, largely because the volumes that we're going through are so great. And we also have very specific items that are going into the bags. And so we want to ensure consistency across the board, that each bag that's going out is sort of similar, and that, you know, there's no difference in what's going in different children's bags. It's universal. Each week there's a different sort of menu. And yeah, so we like to be able to control the volumes of what's coming in and be able to plan and anticipate to make sure we have enough product each week. But with that said, we have wonderful buying power with our suppliers. So, you know, $1 donated to us can be upwards of $2 to $2.50 in buying power.
You mentioned the menus. Of course, that's obviously very important. How are those arranged? Do you have nutritionists who are creating menus each week, or are you just sort of doing everything ad hoc based on what you can manage to get your hands on? How does that all work?
Yeah, so the menus are planned largely by our operations and logistics manager, and they are influenced by feedback from the children and the families. So we really have refined what goes in the bags and tailor what goes in them to be really specific to what we know kids will like to eat. So the items are really child-friendly, single-serving, and familiar for young ones, because I personally have a 3.5-year-old who is very picky. And so it is important that we take into consideration the types of foods we know kids will like. And so the menus change each week, but not, you know, not the entire thing. There's always the same mainstays, like the apples, and we've added carrots and hummus recently and things like that.
I'm a middle-aged man and I'm still picky. So yeah, I identify with the kids. Now, what happens with the distribution then? So I presume it's schools primarily that you're dealing with?
Yeah, so almost all of our sites are schools. But when COVID happened and schools shut down, we had no way to distribute the food. So we kind of reimagined how we were doing things, and we built partnerships with a lot of community agencies. So some that your listeners might be familiar with within sort of the Vancouver area are the Writers Exchange and Mom to Mom and Kinbrace. And so we use sites like that, Raycam on the downtown east side, to facilitate deliveries as well. So mostly schools and some community partners where we know children might be for after school programming on Fridays.
Now, who participates? Like, what I'm wondering is, you know, can any kid just or any family say we need lunches and dinners for the weekend? Or I loathe to use the term, but, you know, there's not any sort of means testing involved, is there, or anything like that? I'm just wondering how you determine who will get the lunches and dinners and the meals for the weekend.
Yeah, so there is no means testing on our end whatsoever. So what we do is leave that decision making up to the sites and the agencies that we partner with. So, you know, the outreach workers in our schools that know the backgrounds of the families, they are the ones that make those decisions. And then they communicate to us how many bags that they need, how many children and families are within their sight. So we really put our trust in them because they know their families best. And some sites also offer the program kind of by way of sign up. So they send out information about who we are, and any families that feel they would benefit from it can kind of raise their hand and say they'd like to be on the program. But by and large, that is left to the people who really know the families well. And then we're just given those numbers and we deliver to the sites.
So Backpack Buddies, then, you deal strictly with schools and community organizations, not individual families. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Today, that's what it looks like. I mean, 9 years ago when we started, we had much more sort of connection to the families. And now that has sort of, we've stepped back from that. And we really just work with the partners who are in charge once we drop those bags off, of getting them in the hands of the right people.
This sounds like a massive operation, and I congratulate you for being able to pull it off, but I can't help but wonder how is everything funded?
Yeah, it is a massive operation. So, you know, like most registered charities, we are funded by corporate donors, individual donors from the community, a lot of grant writing, and of course some government funding, which was really, that was new to us when we were able to access some emergency response funding throughout COVID, which really was pivotal in helping us to expand and grow our program to the scale that we needed to throughout the pandemic, as the need has just surged.
We've already talked a little bit about coping through COVID, but I'd like to get into a bit more detail. Can you take us back 20 months to when it all started? You know, what did the situation look like when everything shut down back in March of 2020?
Yeah, the way that I describe this is that it was as if someone said to us, take everything you know about everything that you've built, your supply chain, your distribution model, your volunteer network, throw it all out the window, toss it out. But you need to do the same thing on a bigger scale, and you need to do it now. That was what we faced as an organization. You know, our school shut, there was panic buying, so our supply chain was strained. Our volunteers were no longer allowed to come and fill the bags because of COVID. You know, we were all told to stay home. And so, and then we knew that there were more families and more kids than ever before that were hungry. They'd lost their breakfast and lunch programs at school. Other community agencies had shut down. And so, you know, we took those kind of second half of March of 2020, we took a step back as an organization. We looked at the problem and we had a decision. It was either to sort of say, well, we'll just have to stop what we're doing and resume when COVID dies down, which at that point in time, we all thought maybe it'll just be a few weeks, or we have to rebuild our organization. And we decided to try to rebuild it and to reimagine what we do. And I'm really proud to say, you know, from beginning of March in 2020, we were supporting 1,300 kids a week. And by June, we were supporting 3,000. So we hired more people. We worked around the clock in our warehouse, filling our bags. We diversified our supply chain. We just did everything that we could. And we diversified our distribution model. We found new community partners and agencies where we knew people were accessing different emergency supports through COVID. We did some home deliveries. We just did everything that we possibly could because we knew these families and children were in really, really difficult situations.
So was there any sort of interruption, or maybe I should say, what sort of an interruption was there when everything started before you were able to regroup and adapt and cope with the new situation?
There was a small kind of couple of days in the first few days of April where things weren't quite up and running yet. But I largely, we were really able in that 2 week period, because that 2 weeks was actually spring break. So schools were shut, and we don't operate typically when schools are shut, at least not on full capacity, because that's, you know, that's how we distribute. So although reimagining our model when schools were shut allowed us to launch a summer program, which was really exciting for us and has allowed us to continue that. But when it comes to disruptions, there was very minimal. I'm super proud to say we got it done.
So what does it look like now? Here we are 20 months into the pandemic. I've given up trying to guess when the pandemic is going to run its course. You know, who knows when that'll happen. So what are things looking like now?
Yeah, in terms of distribution or need or...
Well, let's cover both. Let's start with distribution. You know, schools are open. That's great. Community centers are open. But, you know, things could change, vaccine or no. You know, what does it look like? Is it pretty much back to normal now, or are there still challenges you're looking at?
Yeah, it is. I'd say we're back to quote unquote normal. We've kept those community partners that we built, and then just continued to add more schools and more sites almost every single week. I mean, just this morning, we got an email from a new school that we're adding on the island. And so, you know, what that tells us is that the need is certainly not slowing down. The distribution model has stabilized, but the need certainly hasn't.
And is the need more or less the same as it was before the pandemic started, or has it grown? What have you noticed?
It's grown dramatically. You know, I think about some of the families that we work with, and one mother we spoke with in particular recently that... you know, when school shut and she wasn't able to access some of her regular food supports, she had no idea how she was going to feed her four-year-old. And she actually reached out personally to our organization, and we got the school site that her daughter now attends on the program, and, you know, found a way to support her and some more children in her community. But, you know, speaking to her about what this has done for her, and just how devastating the effects of COVID have been, we know that that's not a one-off story. And so many of our families and children are experiencing this. And people are feeling like the world is sort of going back to normal, quote unquote. And I really would urge, you know, your listeners and people in our communities to recognize that that is a privilege and it's not afforded to everybody, and that we are going to feel the effects of this pandemic for years and years to come. You know, the psychological effects, the effects of long-term hunger on children that, you know, may have experienced food insecurity for the first time due to COVID. You know, there is going to be ramifications for a very, very long time. And so we as an organization are just committed to continuing to grow and show up for our community and families and be there.
Focusing just on East Van and the downtown East Side, where most of our listeners are you distributing to all the schools in the area, or are there some that still aren't participating?
We are not in every single school. We are in, I believe we're in nine schools on the downtown East Side, as well as three community partner sites in the area. So we're supporting approximately 350 children a week within the downtown East Side.
If someone's interested in participating, contributing in any way they can to Backpack Buddies, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, the best way is to just go to our website, backpackbuddies.ca. Lots of information about how to get involved with us, whether you're an individual or a corporation, as well as, information about donating and what kind of, you know, a $20 donation feeds a child for the entire weekend on our program. And so, you know, I would really urge your listeners to go check out our website and to join us in this fight against hunger.
Are there other opportunities for volunteers in case they are of limited means?
Yeah, there's lots of opportunities to volunteer. We're just starting to reopen that program up in a more kind of robust way. So there's information and an email there if you're interested to sign up for volunteer details right on our website. And our coordinator will get back to you with how to get involved.
It's been really great to get a chance to speak with you, Emily Ann. Thank you very much for joining us here on Co-op Radio.
Thank you so much, James.
That was Emily Ann King, co-executive director and co-founder of Backpack Buddies. You can learn more about and donate to Backpack Buddies by going to the website backpackbuddies.ca. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.